2020 is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because we lost our own kids.
And then have these politicians who want to co-opt everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They can't be, you don't arrest your way out of these problems.
Good evening, everybody. This is Brian Powers. It's Wednesday night. This is NJRR Live coming at you from an undisclosed location. And if you'll notice, I look a little better and I sound a little better tonight. We actually have a good functioning studio rather than me and a laptop in my shed. So thanks to all our donors and sponsors out there that have helped, of course, make New Jersey Revolution Radio possible as we, you know, upgrade. The bottom line is we had to take a little step back to take a lot of steps forward. And we can't wait. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And, you know, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming weeks. But I do assure you that some of the technical stuff we've been working on over the last couple of weeks is going to start to even it out, and you're going to start to see the improvements take place. As always, you know, I'm excited to be here on a Wednesday night. And if you would like to sponsor or donate, you can go to www.njrevolutionradio.com to make a donation. Or if you'd like to sponsor us, if you have activist work out there that needs to be promoted and you'd like to work with us, please make sure you contact us. info@njrevolutionradio.com is the email address, or you can contact us through the website. You can message us on social media. We have, of course, our comrade Leah that works on our communications and our marketing and all that stuff behind the scenes, and we appreciate her. Give her work to do, you know, hook us up, give us a call and tell us you can help us out, and we'll get it done. We're here as an independent media company, and I'm really proud of that. I've gotten some flack. If people, I think like my audience, at least what I've been able to cultivate for New Jersey Revolution Radio has come through, you know, my social media, particularly my Facebook page, where I can be a bit of an asshole. And I declared today that I'm not voting, which is always fun to watch all these people that have aggravated me for years and years and years be aggravated by the things that I say. You know, it's just, and I basically made the statement that, look, you know, you've got a fascist, basically a racist, horrible fascist in Donald Trump. You got this neoliberal, warmongering, fake guy that's just going to continue to destroy. I mean, the union movement's already dead, and we're going to get into that later on. But that's not, and I've already declared long ago that I'm never voting for another Democrat. So I'm not going to go back on my word there. And many people know I've spent some time organizing with the Green Party here in New Jersey, mainly as an activist, and mainly because I always saw the Green Party as a chance to reach people at a grassroots level and talk about issues and whatever. We use elections as platforms. Unfortunately, they nominated Howie Hawkins, who's a potato head. And, you know, I've been saying that he's a potato head, and people are annoyed with me that I'm saying, you know, and I see, and, you know, people are asking, well, why, you know, you've been this Green Party supporter, you've been mocking Democrats for years, you've been touting the Green Party. And the truth is, you know, I always believed in the Green Party. I still believe in a lot of people in the Green Party. But on a national level this year, they've utterly just embarrassed themselves. And they put together a campaign that's only on the ballot in 31 states. And, you know, I got canned. I got fired from the campaign like 5 days after he gets the nomination because I wasn't doing a good job, according to those idiots. And what transpired afterwards, you know, just proved to me that they're very, very bad organizers working on that campaign. And it's a shame that the Green Party, that there is talent there. There are resources there. There are people there genuinely trying to do some good in our country. But it's overshadowed by a man who's been crossbred with a vegetable. And I'm sorry that that happened, but I'm an expert at organizing and I'm a gardener and I feel qualified to make this judgment. So, you know, look, I don't know where my future lies with the Green Party. I know that I don't know that I've left the party. I don't know that I'm coming back to the party. I'll be honest with you. I'm hanging out on New Jersey Revolution Radio right now. I've got so many comrades around me that have stuck by me through some pretty rough times in my life, and I'm not going to abandon them for a potato head. I'm also not going to abandon my principles and labor and all the things that I've stood up for, and that has meant, unfortunately, I've lost comrades. I've lost friends, but if I lost you over this, I don't think you were much of a comrade to begin with. So it is what it is. You know, I'm taking a political stand. It cost me another job, and I don't really care because at the end of the day, you know, New Jersey Revolution Radio is going to go on a long time after the Potato Heads campaign. And I'm looking forward to the ride that we're all taking together. I'm going to bring in one of those comrades that's still around, and he's going to be co-hosting with me as he does often here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. That's Christian Perez. Comrade, how are you, Christian, tonight?
Doing great this evening. Thank you, Brian. Thanks again for having me. And it's great to be back.
Yeah. So I started off, of course, you know, with some complaining, but let's celebrate a little bit because
I think 2020 has been bad. What were we talking about last week? We were talking about Eddie Van Halen and
terrible.
I mean, look, but there has been some good news. And that is that in Bolivia, there was an election. And the winner of that election was the MAS party, the Movement Towards Socialism, the MAS party, the party of ousted president, democratically elected president Evo Morales. They have won the election with 55% of the votes. The guy's name is Arce. He's the former finance minister of Bolivia. I mean, this is a huge deal. And those of you out there that have been loyal to New Jersey Revolution Radio and have been following for at least the past year know that we've been covering this issue. And there was a woman that I brought up. Her name was Patricia Guzman. She was a mayor in one of the small towns in Bolivia. And she was actually attacked, assaulted, and humiliated by a fascist goon squad. And she was just elected senator of her. She was just elected a senator in Bolivia.
Remember that story. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a great, it's a momentous occasion. This is good news. I don't think the United States is done with Bolivia. I don't have faith that Biden's going to win. I'm sorry, but even if Biden wins, I don't think a Biden presidency would leave the socialist government in Bolivia alone. Our viewers can be reminded of 2009 when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, supported a coup against the democratically elected president Manuel Zelaya of Honduras. So the Democrats have a track record, and they got a track record of doing it 11 years ago. So that's where we're at with that stuff.
Can you tell us anything about this president-elect? Do you know much about him yet?
Well, I mean, other than he is a party member. He's been in the MAS for years. He was the former finance minister. He was the finance minister, I believe, for the entire time that Morales was president of Bolivia. So he is a leader of the party. He's going to be bringing Morales back. And, I mean, things look good. The opposition party, that is the organization led by that guy Camacho. His name was Luis Fernando Camacho. He was the right-wing guy. They ended up with about 14% of the vote, and a former president ended up getting 30% of the vote.
That is, you know, it's staggering that the people had the balls to overthrow a government because they were going to defend democracy or something, got 14% of the vote. Now, and you think about all the coups that we've had, right? I mean, in South America, and this was probably the case in all of them, this was just kind of an odd case where they had elections relatively soon after a coup, which normally doesn't happen. Usually you'll have a strong man take power, and that'll be that for a decade or so.
One of the reasons they were able to have the election was because despite COVID, people have been rioting in the streets. And thankfully, Bolivia has a strong labor movement. You know, we're going to be talking about labor movement. They have a strong history of activism in that country. So even a year ago, I remember when I was driving up to the coffee house to talk about it, there were talking heads who were saying, look, I mean, Bolivia, for the most part, will handle this better than other countries in Latin America would because they have an infrastructure there, because they have a labor movement that is used to fighting for the workers. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves with
built by what will be going down as one of the greatest socialist leaders of our time, Evo Morales. I mean, he's the one that built that structure. He's the one that had so much to do with the Bolivian Bolivarian revolution, right? I mean, this is
this is Evo's
work. Continuing the work of the people, really. It's beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, and I understand the fact that he kept getting elected. It made people uneasy. But number one, if you're not in Bolivia, it don't matter. Number two, Franklin Roosevelt was elected four times, and he was the best president we had probably in the 20th century. So, I mean, with the United States, it's do as I say, not as I do. And that's how usually imperialism works. So I'm happy for Bolivia. I'm excited for Bolivia, but I'm still very, wary moving forward. I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't see fascists just giving up power.
No. Well, they never will. I mean, as long as capitalism exists. I mean, to me, capitalism and fascism are just a very narrow thread apart. So, and ultimately, capitalism falls. We're seeing that here in the United States. Ultimately, capitalism has... goes through stages, right? But here it's gone capitalism, neoliberalism, and now, I mean, one could argue we're fascist. I do,
I mean, we're definitely teetering. I don't think we're fascist yet, but we're definitely teetering. Donald Trump is definitely a wannabe.
We're fascist-y.
Fascist-y.
We're fascist-y right now. Right. At least that, which is dangerous enough.
It's more than dangerous enough. I mean, so... Last week, we mentioned an organization. We were talking about right-wing organizations. There was a movement in Brazil called the Integralists.
Oh, yeah.
And I made reference to how, I mean, they're back now. They're originally wiped out by the Vargas military regime, but they were a multicultural fascism. It was still centered around Christianity. It was still, centered around Eurocentrism. But I mean, in the United States, people are like, well, look at the Proud Boys. They can't be fascists. They have blacks. They have Latinos. Fascism in 2020 in the United States is not going to look the way it looked in Italy and Germany 80 years ago. Right. And that's the first thing people say. Well, they got black people. It doesn't matter. This is the United States in 2020. We're a different country. It's a different time. Right. We have Ben Carson's and was it Candace Owens? So there's going to be people of color that are willing to be the lapdogs for imperialism, for racism. I mean, you can see it. Look, it's in Bolivia and it's here in the United States.
It's all over. And that's why, of course, in the waiting room right now is our comrade Africa. Actually, not in the waiting room right now is our comrade Africa. I just looked in the waiting room and he's not there. So we dropped off real quick. I'm sure he'll be back in a minute. That's OK, because we've been looking over that leads us directly into this conversation. So I found this. We're going to talk now about celebrities.
Oh, boy.
Who support Donald Trump. And they come across the spectrum from all different fields of entertainment. Recently, we've seen Ice Cube take heat for, kind of working with the Trump administration. And, look, I mean, I'm an Ice Cube fan. His music and his art brought something into my life that I didn't have growing up in a white suburb, but also, I recognize this problem with all kinds of art forms. I listen to death metal a lot and there's a lot of violence and I'm a Slayer fan. It's hard not to ignore the Nazi imagery and Slayer stuff. So across the spectrum, I've always run into this where I love the artist, I love the beat, I love the music, or it's just, I listened to it back in the day when I wasn't as politically aware and it's in my head as nostalgia more or less. But yeah. I listen to the way many people in hip hop talk about women. I listen to the things said in heavy metal that are clearly racist. I listen to the things in country music that are clearly, meant to separate whites from blacks. Yeah. It's ugly, but it's part of American fabric. It's hard to unwind. We're bringing Africa now because Africa made it back into the studio because he has a lot to say on his Facebook page, and I love Africa's Facebook page. It's the dude's no holes barred, and so he's one of the people that we've met a few times in the streets at protests. But watching him on Facebook, I love your opinions, man. And I talked about Ice Cube last week a little bit, and I kind of misspoke because I'll tell you what. I watched the video and I kind of heard him without even understanding that he was making that video in response to, the heat he was taking. But what he was saying, man, if you didn't have that preconceived knowledge in your head, what he was saying was reminiscent of stuff Jesse Jackson said back in the early 70s, that we need our own party. I can't trust Democrats or Republicans, so we just need to build our own power structure. So, like everybody else, I mean, his politics are messy, but I don't think, I wasn't as hard on him And then I started digging into this more and seeing that, you know, Dean Cain, who Christian Perez looks amazingly like, by the way, you know, and Roseanne Barr and, you know, all these reality TV shows. So Africa, when you see a celebrity, a sports hero, Mariano Rivera, what the fuck? Is he on this friggin' shirt, man? I got a Yankee shirt on. I think he's on. There he is. Look. I got a shirt with that asshole on.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Mariano Rivera is a Trumper, huh?
He's in the article that we're looking at right now here. And Africa, when I roll this screen past you and you see these names, what tell me about the anger that comes to your soul. Tell me about it, brother.
What, the cheeseburgers?
Celebrities who support Donald Trump. I mean, here we go. Let's see. Who's this guy?
Country guy, Trace Atkins.
Country guy, Trace Atkins.
Next, unsurprising.
Roseanne Barr.
Remember, Roseanne said that the coronavirus was created to kill boomers. Remember?
Herschel Walker?
Yeah. Herschel Walker.
You know? So Africa, what do you think of all these reporting Donald Trump?
We in trouble, man. But it's like, but I don't even get mad no more because they're doing what they're supposed to do. That's their part in this system. Their part in this system is to get people, like coerce people to support the status quo. And that's exactly what they're doing. You see, like once you read, once you studied, you understand them for who they are. Like, I'm a sociologist by trade. So I went to school to understand how societies work and how they function. And these people serve their role. And it's class. Like Ice Cube is saying, I'm doing this contract for black people. He don't care about black people. He care about his class. He care about the people in his his economic class. Those are the only people he care about, and making himself richer. I mean, the plan, if you look at his plan, it looked like Ronald Reagan's plan. Somebody said that on my Facebook page. that plan, it looked like the Joe Biden, it looked like the Trump plan. They all look the same. Your Democrats, Republican, they're all the same. Like when you was talking about what happened, you said Bolivia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yo, what's her name? Bertha Cáceres? Didn't Hillary Clinton have something to do with her dying in Honduras?
Yeah. Bertha Cáceres, yeah.
Right.
I said the name wrong.
But yeah. It's like, you're right.
Both of the parties are the same, and all the athletes are the same, the entertainers are the same. In 96, back in the 90s, Ice Cube was trying to seem like he was cool, he was down, he needed street credibility. You know who he went to? He went to what's his name? How his name just escaped me, man.
Easy.
Muhammad Khaled. Khaled Muhammad. He went to him to get social cred. When he went to Muhammad, and then he got flagged back from the status quo, from the onus of industry, he fell back. And Muhammad said something about him. He gave a speech about him, calling him a punk, calling him a sucker, because he knows, like, he's really not there for the people. He's really there to take care of himself, to make business deals. They use us as leverage. So whatever they say, all this rhetoric, that all this stuff that they come on TV and say, whatever he's saying, I listen to him too. I watched him on 4 different shows, and he is saying nothing that is going, like, remember, he said black people. Like, he put quotations, I wasn't saying done for black people. That was born here, descendants of slaves. I'm a descendant of slave. I was born here. But his ideas, I'm not a business owner. I don't have no money. So all that millions of dollars, those capitals, that money not going to me. That money is going to people like him. People with enough money, enough leverage to be able to use that to buy business in the community that won't pay people nothing, that will just use us as commodity, just use us for our labor and discard us. They don't care about us. As a sociologist, somebody that went to school to study society, I'm going to tell you how you fix the community, how you fix the society. I'm going to do that shit, bro. Everybody acting like they don't know. I'm going to tell you in like 3 seconds. Put institutions in the community that work for the people in the community. Social you can do that. Your Ice Cube, Ice Tea, Vanilla Ice, whatever they want to call themselves, they can all come together, put some money together, and build institutions in all our neighborhoods. Those institutions are going to basically direct people on who they are. That's the function of institutions. Even 50 Cent. I mean, they could put all their money together and build co-ops make the people that live in those communities control the capitalism in their space. But they're not going to say that. They're going to come on, Russell Wilson, I hope you blow his knee out. All them NFL players. You know, I don't care if you're on your fantasy team, bro.
He is my fantasy quarterback, but I guess I'll pick up a backup.
He's a traitor. Every time, yo, he's on TV. He's on NFL Network, ESPN, and they keep coming on. Yo, go vote. Go vote. Who are you voting for? Who are you voting for? And like they're acting like they're doing something. They're doing activism. Like they're freeing people. They're doing something good. They're Superman. No, you're the devil. You're the bad guy. You're telling people to go vote for white supremacy. The same government.
Let me ask you, I mean, where do we start, though? Because, I mean, when you see, like, pretty much any celebrity endorsement, any, I don't see revolutionary celebrities. I mean, Christian, the British guy, the comedian that does a lot. I mean, he's
Sacha
not.
Sacha Baron Cohen?
I'm sorry, what's his name?
Sacha Baron Cohen?
No, he's a jackass. He's funny as hell, but he's.
I'll be honest, I don't really like British. Eddie Izzard?
Eddie Izzard's funny, but not political.
I don't like British comedy.
He's got long hair. Russell Brand.
Skinny
Russell
guy.
Brand. This is a guy that I do have respect for. But I mean, there's not a lot out there that, and I think that's a product of they're not political. They're celebrities. So they're actors.
They will get canceled. They care about
it. Ice Cube disappointed me so much was he wrote a song called, and he said in that song, I'll never have dinner with the president. And you thought he knew. It's not about, you know, you going and representing your community, or it's not about you going in and getting some kind of better deal for it. It's about you being used as a pawn in their game and putting them. Now you're out being tweeted by a Trump administration as working with them. And that was the whole fucking point why you won't have dinner with a president. It's disappointing to a guy, you know, who, you know, listen, maybe I'm naive. Maybe I just lived a life where I thought these guys were more than what they actually are.
You're not.
Educate me, man. I learned shit from Public Enemy and NWA and all that. I learned shit from them. I can't deny it. It's hard for me to watch this.
You're not naive, right? It's them who are naive, right? Because if you're a celebrity and you're working with Trump, you're either a Trumper. Or you really have deluded yourself into thinking that you're rising above and you're trying to reach across the road and you're trying to find higher ground. As Brian just said, there is no instance where you work with Trump where he's not immediately trying to use you. Right? Absolutely. But Donald Trump is an out and out white supremacist. So if I'm like, for instance, I like MMA. So if I'm Henry Cejudo, who's a great mixed martial artist, probably the greatest fighter that's ever lived, in his head, he really thinks that he's rising above by working with Trump. Trump doesn't care about your intended policies. Trump doesn't care what you want to do for people of color. Trump needs brown and black people to surround him so that he can try and get those votes. That being said, absolutely, yes, the Democrats do it too. You could look at how the Democrats treated the squad immediately before and after they decided that they wanted to speak out for themselves, right? Ilhan Omar, or his AOC, said they love the image of people of color legislating. They don't like the idea of revolutionary people of color doing what needs to be done and standing up for the small guy, for the little guy, for passing policies that help people. But you do not work with Trump or the Democrats, and they're not using you.
It's exactly what it is. And it's sad because I've seen it over and over. I'm telling you, I'm watching videos from the 70s and they're having panels on what should black people do. How do black people save themselves? This is in 1970, and they're telling me to go vote and make sure Nixon don't get into power.
James Baldwin. They used to bring people on to debate James Baldwin. They used to bring people on to debate Malcolm X.
Where's Malcolm? Where's James? Where are they right now?
Yo, they killed them. If they're here now, they kill them now too. But these people, yo, Brian, they're serving the purpose that they're here to serve. They don't care about us. And it's like, and we need to understand that, but we don't, because we're being coerced all around us. The thing these people genuinely care about is, yo, I don't care about no artists. Like, they could all die and I don't care. Like, they don't enrich my life. I don't care about no athletes. Yo, I have a bigger purpose. I can describe the vision that I have for the world. And we are actually going in the opposite direction. So to me, music, entertainment, sports, all these things get in the way. And I can't even enjoy that no more. Like before I went to school.
Go ahead, that's very sad for me to hear. I love it. My company is art and activism. I think that so much of what art can bring to society is beautiful. I understand where you're coming from. Like I hear you, right? Like I get that we use, but the thing is, that's capitalism making it a distraction. You know, we have always enjoyed going to it. Why should we not enjoy going to the theater or hearing a song or taking in a painting? It's because it's for profit. It's because it's for selfish greed, and we don't have a system that, unless you cater to rich people, you don't get paid in the arts. Or unless you deal drugs at your shows, you don't get paid in the arts. That's it. You got two ways of making money if you're a musician, which is kiss up to the bourgeoisie or sell drugs. You know, and that's not art. Artists should be artists. Artists should be spending their time creating and being beautiful. It's a shame that we've done that to something, and that attitude exists. You know, I get it, man, but I want to cry right now.
No, but it's a scientific term for that. It's called a social construct. We live in a social construct. Like I said, I went to school for sociology, man. I go back to what I learned in school. We live in a social construct. It is designed to function this way. And there we go, my boy. And if we don't do nothing about it, if we don't change the institutions ourselves, they will continue to work the way they've been made to work. It's really that simple. It's nothing hard. So like any star could come out. I could see anybody come out. It could be MC Hammer tomorrow. I know he's not there to speak for me. Because if he really spoke for me, they will cancel him. He won't be on MSNBC. He won't be on CNN. He won't be on none of those stations. He won't be on NPR. And WBAI is starting to go left too. I don't even know what I'm listening to on WBAI. Like there is
ran out of money. They had to get money. What do you think?
They got to fit the what? The social construct. If they don't fit it, they're gonna die. But there's a way for them to save themselves. Yo, you know what they could do? WBAI could sponsor you, Brian. WBAI could sponsor. They could sponsor activists. They could give their platform to activists on the streets. Those activists are going to get them viewers, are going to get people listen to their radio. But they're not going to do that because they don't care about the people. They're worried about getting rich. And they're going to fight amongst themselves, and they're going to put on all kind of goofy stuff. I just turned the radio station. I don't even listen to it no more. I mean, it's sad. But I listen to Bob Marley. I listen to good music, man. You looking for Bob Marley back there?
Man, I listen to everything. And when we get this vaccine out and around, people start getting, we're going to have some shows. I'm going to bring together some artists, man. We're going to do some beautiful things. We were getting there at the beginning of the year. People remember we had a hip hop show in January. We had a great show at a church, man. I rented 2 800-watt PA speakers, man. We had a church. I mean, the doors of the church were going. I mean, we were ready to start doing it. And then, you know, we all got sick and had to shut ourselves in for a few years, you know, while Trump.
You gonna do it in Maine?
What's that?
You gonna do it in Maine?
We'll see what's up, man. We got a lot of work to do. Let's put it down. We're young men. We got a lot of revolution in us. I know that, man. I got to convince you that there is a revolution. So I know I got a lot of work to do, man. Africa, you got any events coming up? Anything you need to plug? You want somebody to give money to something? What's up?
Nah. Look, just keep listening to NJ Radio, man. We got to create our own media. I mean, it's nothing like I do work. My work, my life is my work. When I wake up, I'm an activist. It's doing the work every day. I do the same stuff I do. I mentor, I work, I organize with kids. Today I went to give out the food today to the community. Like this is my life. I mean, but we gotta keep our own platforms where we could speak and reach people. Because it's sad, man, because like people are informed from what they get from the media, from the web. And this stuff is like it's messing up their minds. So we have to create our own platform. You can come to my Facebook page at MAAT Youth Services, my Art Youth Services on Facebook. I try to get dialogue, try to reach people. That's one of the ways I talk to you. Try to reach people with like minds so we can build a connection all over the country. Because we really need a grassroots movement. We gotta organize. The rich are not gonna organize us, nobody else is gonna do it. Those of us that know have to be in the communities and build up centers, hubs for organizing. And the media is a big way to do it too. I mean, just listen to NJ Radio, man. Check out Christian Perez. Check everybody out, man, that's doing the good work.
It's if you want to make a donation, www.njrevolutionradio.com. Thanks a lot, Africa, man. I'll see you again real soon, man. I ain't gonna be that far, man. Love you, brother. Be good. So we got a couple more things to plug yet. We're not done with commercials. I'm sorry. We got to pay bills. We're big deal around here now. Christian Perez has got something coming up. And if you watched NJRR, you've seen Christian Perez a bunch of times here. Now's a chance to get a little more up close and personal and have a conversation with this genius, this treasure we have in the great nation of New Jersey. Christian, what's up, man? What are you up to?
Same old stuff. You know, everyone can check out my podcast. It's Modernity and Absurdity. I'm on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, everywhere. I've got a YouTube channel. I recently just uploaded a video on Five Finger Death Punch, the heavy metal band. They released a new music video, and it's total garbage. It's straight fascist art. It's like straight up ignorant conspiracy theory rock. So yeah. I crashed the video. I got a couple haters. So if you get a chance, check that out, folks. But next week, October 28th at 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon, it's only 90 minutes and it's only $19. I'm going to be giving a lecture via Zoom as a part of lifelong learning at Brookdale Community College in Monmouth County. And it's called The Impact of Today's Conspiracy Theories. And I'm going to be talking about QAnon. I'm going to be talking about COVID conspiracies, 5G conspiracies, and how they crept into the mainstream. Check it out. I mean, it's $19. It's 90 minutes. It's right in the middle of the day. It's not a lot of money. I mean, I don't get paid more money if more people sign up. But I want people to check it out. It should be a lot of fun. I'll stay as long as need be. I'll answer questions, and it's going to be interactive. You don't have to put on pants. You could do it from home. It's that cool.
At some point, I would stand up and make a fool of myself. So I will wear pants. I mean, like Christian said, check this out, man. It ain't about the money. Like, first off, the $20 goes to make sure we get more of these because Christian, you know, like I said, we want to do more. So whether you're giving money to independent media or Christian at these events, you know, make sure you sponsor a little bit of independent media and education out there. We're going to leap into our main segment here. And I'm going to tell everybody right now that I'm going to be upset and triggered by this conversation because, you know, those of you that know me know I got canned by CWA Local 1033 about 2.5 years ago. Wow. And, you know, seeing our guests.
Isn't that why you started New Jersey Revolution Radio?
I was still with CWA. I actually started as a side gig. I was, I was driving to work to Trenton when I started this network. And it was my way of doing politics outside the union environment, which was just stifling and just horrible and just, you know, wrought with liberals and Democrats and nonsense. And ultimately I got fired and framed and I was on Facebook. I had nervous breakdowns. It wrecked my life. It wrecked my finances. It wrecked relationships with my family that I'm still repairing, you know, today and still putting my life back together after what was done to me. And the bottom line is they lied and it's basically documented that they lied. They're hiding documents that union dues money is paying to pay lawyers to keep me from seeing why I was fired. I don't know. And it's literally all part of this big giant machine of capitalism that has basically sucked up the cause of unions. And there's a lot of factors. And our comrade tonight, John, is a casualty, but he's one of those guys that's just another step in the fight. I mean, you got thrown out of the AFL-CIO after a wildcat strike, but I guess it feels like a start, when you kind of get going and taking on these big powers. John, welcome to the show. And I'd love to give you a couple of minutes to introduce yourself to our audience and tell us about how you became the Oakland socialist.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me here. I got my start in politics during the civil rights movement and so on, but I joined the Carpenters Union in 1970. And in 1973, we had a big semi-wildcat strike that went on for 6 weeks against Nixon's wage controls. And that strike really showed me what a union can be and should be. And it was really inspirational. I should mention also, and this is really in relation to what was said about Bolivia, there was another huge event that happened in 1973 that had a lifelong effect on me. That was the coup in Chile that overthrew the government there. And that was what really interested me in revolutionary politics, because I was watching that event as it was developing. And what I felt was, this is before the coup, that something's not right there, that you have to go all the way. I couldn't really put it into, clear words, but you have to go all the way. if you're going to, like they say, if you want to kill a tiger, you can't pull out one nail at a time. You know, you either have to go all the way or you're going to be crushed. And that was what happened. And I think that's relevant to what happened with Morales in Bolivia. Also, I should just say, in relation to your previous speaker, Africa, that I'm Jewish descent. And, you know, I read a lot about, you know, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. You have the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto under the Nazis. And it was a really inspirational event. But you know who they went after first? Now, I should say this just to make this clear. I'm not advocating violence or killing people. But in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, the ones they went after first were not the Nazis. It was the Jewish capitalists that were fronting for the Nazis. And so we should just remember that the capitalists will always take the side of the other capitalists. Doesn't matter what race, religion, ethnicity, or whatever. That's, to me, that was a key lesson from that. So anyway, I got active, to backtrack, I got active in the unions, and I got elected recording secretary against the wishes of the union bureaucracy, and all kinds of stuff. They tried to blackball me. Well, they did blackball me for about a year or so. Oh, I got a broken arm, had my life threatened, just but at the same time also getting offered jobs under the table. So eventually then what happened was in 1999, we had, I think you can see this big Wildcat strike.
All right, John's wearing a shirt. 1999 Carpenter's Wild Strike. Wildcat strike.
Right. And I think you're familiar with what a wildcat strike is, right?
I have my own experience.
Can you explain it? Can you explain what a wildcat is?
So basically what a wildcat strike is a strike that is organized and conducted by the rank and file, usually against the wishes of the leadership. In our wildcat strike, our leadership had signed basically a sweetheart agreement, a sellout agreement, and the members didn't even have the right to vote on it. And so we had some protests, and the members decided, we decided we're going to go on a wildcat strike against it. And so then I was thrown out of the union for causing that wildcat strike.
Yeah.
And I should just mention, I'm about 5'4", and I intimidated about 2,000 carpenters into going out on strike, right?
There you go. I had a brief wildcat strike, and I can't say that I organized it, but there was an incident in a garage where a member was disciplined, and you know, I walked across the street to talk to the member, and then I turned around and my entire garage was walking out with us. It was just
right.
And I think most, and then there's a story when I learned at CWA and how CWA was formed in New Jersey. They were bargaining with the governor. They couldn't come to an agreement. The members said, we're going on strike. The leaders went to Pennsylvania so they wouldn't go to jail, while the members conducted a wildcat strike, and that got them their contract. Right. You know, so it's, you know, wildcats, I think when we think about strikes now, I think, and some of the bastardization of our cause has to do with the way we look at strikes. Now we look at SEIU, this strike in a box, a one-day strike, a week, nothing, does nothing, show of PR, right? Strikes traditionally were not negotiated and planned. Strikes happened when people got pissed off and said, no, we're not going to work for you pricks anymore. We're walking off the fucking job. So now we've got this idea that we need to vote and we need to talk and we need to strategize and we got to work with the Democrats and we got to have a show. And that's never historically what effective striking was. Effective striking is a militant action where you destroy the company until they give in to your demands. That's the strike.
So we should remember back in the 1930s, you had the sit-down strikes. You had big mass picket lines of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people. When the police attacked them, they resisted. You had like open defiance of the courts and so on. Back in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this would have been back in the 1970s. They tried to, at that time, everything was built union. They tried to build a non-union job in downtown Pittsburgh, and something like 10,000 building trades workers shut down the entire city. And the chief of police said, well, what are you going to do? Basically, everything that they did was illegal, but what are you going to do? Arrest 10,000 people and create a riot? So it's similar to what I was saying about the what happened in Chile. You can't do these things halfway. So what happened, I think, was after the, and this will get back to your story and mine and the stories of hundreds of thousands of others, really. After that period of intense labor militancy in the 1930s, then the corporations realized, look, you know, they've gotten a little bit too strong. And we can't just fight them tooth and nail time after time. It you know, they're becoming too radicalized, the labor movement and working class. So better make some concessions now in order to undercut them later. And that's exactly what happened. Then you had that period. And I would also say, I think that that the role of, right, and we should also not forget the role of Stalinism and the Soviet Union, which gave socialism a bad name. And so in the period that I came up in the 50s and 60s and so on, then that was what they did. They undercut they made concessions all the while just in their own propaganda, but also the propaganda of the union leadership. You know, we don't have to fight anybody that thinks you want to fight, that we have to fight. They're a commie. They're a danger. They're going to be blacklisted. And many of us were, and so on. And so in that period, up until the late 70s, they were granting concessions. Once they had weakened us enough, once they had confused enough workers, and then, and also in the, by the late 70s, the whole economy had turned around and they couldn't even afford to grant concessions, even if they wanted to, you know, then they went on the offensive and they had the union leadership continued to do everything it could to stamp out the traditions of militancy and also of socialism within the labor movement. And I think that did have an effect. Then it allowed a layer of the most right wing, the most confused, the most kiss ass also of the members to rise to the top, to have gain an influence, which they never had before. That's why you see this phenomenon now of in 2016, 40-something percent of union members voted for Trump, and 52% of white union members voted for Trump.
Well, that's
why, because of that heritage of that previous period.
Yeah, it's also a product. I see, Christian. I just think that's a product of how much people respect their union leadership nowadays. You put a bunch of shitbird assholes in power, the members look at them and go, "Why should I listen to this guy? Hey, I'm racist. This guy's racist. I'll vote for him." You know, I mean, it's what's happening. I see. Christian, you had a question.
Well, I want to ask John, do you think that because traditionally, like the Democratic Party got their power from like the Liberal Labor Alliance, right? Do you think that part of the backlash or part of the reason for that split or part of the reason so many white workers went for Trump and towards conservatism, was that a result of backlash of like to like civil rights legislation, LGBT legislation? Would you call that backlash to those concessions and those gains?
Well, I think that was a part of it. I think more so it was, you know, for especially amongst industrial workers. I mean, they saw their plants being shut down right, left, and center and moving all over the world. That was part of NAFTA and so on. And the Democrats were pushing that just as much as the Republicans. Yeah. Then here comes somebody along who says, well, I'm against all of that stuff. Of course, he was lying through his teeth, but he seemed to be different. And so I think that had a big role in it. But yes, the other part is, you know, it became acceptable, and Trump helped to make it acceptable to be a racist. And so therefore that, you know, everybody has in their thinking different contradictory ideas and feelings.
Yeah.
Those ideas and feelings rose to the top then amongst a lot of workers. I should just say, I don't want to be entirely doom and gloom and negative, because you are seeing, especially amongst younger people, this tremendous ferment, which I think that's one reason that the mainstream of the capitalist class wants to get Trump out, because he's really creating a tremendous ferment. I always used to say, amongst my fellow union members, those who were trying to get people active, that our best ally is the boss, because he can, he's going to keep on stirring stuff up. And so there's a whole layer of younger people that that are active. We've seen it in the streets, of course. Hopefully that's stirring up some thoughts amongst the layer of union members that will feel like, you know what, the time is now for me to start organizing, to make my union not just fight for me on the job, not just to fight for another 75 cents an hour, but also to fight against all of this stuff, the racism, the Proud Boys, Trump's repression, and so on.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about like why unions have fallen and where maybe there is a little bit of hope left. I said earlier that unions are dead. I think the union movement is dead. And I don't say that as hopeless, but I do say it as just a logical assessment. We're down below 6% in the private sector. Where there is a bastion of hope is public sector. But the Janus ruling of last year has had an absolutely devastating effect on the coffers of public sector unions. There's no money left. Locals are closing and merging left and right. And so I had an interesting career path where I came from the private sector into the public sector. So I watched the process that took place in the private sector as kind of like a little bit of a preview of what's going on in the public sector. And what I would say to, you know, these public sector unions is stop pretending it's any different for you. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the power structure that controls government in this country now controls labor unions. And as John, you pointed out that these are people that the most kiss-ass people rose to the top. They now sell you out every day, including, you know, people like Trumka, Hedy Rosenstein, who's a complete fraud. She runs CWA New Jersey. She's one of the most powerful unions. If you turn Phil Murphy, who's our governor, around, you'll see Hedy's feet sticking out of his ass because that's all she ever does. And I don't know. I come from a world where you bargain with the boss. You fight the boss. You don't do public appearances with the boss and smile and wave with them. That's who I take on. And, you know, I think that when you have union leaders that have rose through the ranks without really challenging power, they think that's the way it gets done. And it's taken over completely. Yeah. The glimmer of light in the public sector union has to be accompanied by some kind of independent union movement.
It sees nothing without a demand. It never has. No,
but I really, just like I feel about independent media, we need independent movements. And I think that goes for the union movement. We have to organize outside of the AFL-CIO, outside of these power structures, because they're all fucked up. And we'll never Trotsky infiltrate our way up to the top of this shit. I've seen it. It's the mob. The cops are involved. Politicians, whole state legislatures. You ain't. Socialists just can't infiltrate. We have to build. That's my opinion.
I don't think that we should go too far. I don't think that the unions are dead. We should remember that they still have almost 15 million members. There's no other organization that comes, political organization, that comes even close to having that number of workers. And then you have to include their families. So I think, and we should also remember a year or two ago before COVID, there was a whole series of like wildcat strikes, teachers and mainly amongst teachers.
Yeah.
Remember,
Public sector.
In fact, I went back to West Virginia to see that strike there. And here's something else. In our wildcat strike, and you could not have a better example of the members rising up against their own union leadership and against the structures of their union. But you know what else happened? At the same time, the attendance at our local union meetings went up by 10 times over.
Oh, of course, man.
So my point, and
nighttime always a popular time to go to,
right? And so as far as organizing outside I think that what we need to do is see if there's not a mood and a potential to help union members organize outside the official channels, outside the structure of their own unions, to build rank and file opposition caucuses.
Yeah, I mean, we see Gordon just popped on the screen. Unions are trash, pig-headed idiots. I'll be honest with you. Like me,
and
I love labor. I've always said I love labor, but we have to recognize what union members think of us, and that's not an uncommon opinion. And you know, we could trash Gordon and call him a scab and an asshole or whatever. I don't know, Gordon. Thank you for your comment. But you know what? Like honestly, if we don't recognize that a good, like you said, half of them voted for Trump. So many. Well, no, we are worth 25. See, this is where you go wrong. See, am I agreeing with a goddamn Trumper? See, they killed the economy. No,
they killed the economy.
The economy to bear for many people. And to be honest with you, we're worth hundreds of dollars an hour, dumbass.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you got it wrong. But what I'm saying is that's an opinion that's out there that we're trash, that we're not representing workers, that we're just political get out the vote machines. And quite frankly, that was my experience at the top levels, but at the grassroots levels, right? When I was a shop steward, man, it was about my guy. I didn't get into unions because I wanted to get into politics. I got into unions because I thought the boss was an asshole and we needed to, I wanted to stick up for my buddies in the shop.
Right, exactly.
Who I went and drank beer with after work every day because I was, you know, and it was a social bond that brought me to this cause, you know?
So, like I said, well, I've been involved in three different Wildcat strikes.
Wow.
And that's what
you're a fucking troublemaker, dude. You're a fucking troublemaker.
I
love it.
and it's no, I would bet you that you would find more Wildcat strikes amongst you and more rank and file worker activity amongst in the workplace amongst union workers than non-union workers. And just being in a union, it does set off something in a lot of workers' consciousness. You know, I remember the first day that or the first job that I was on as a young apprentice, and I was on the job for about a month, and something happened and my foreman, he said, John, what the fuck are you doing? And the blood just rushed to my head. I said, I'm looking for some fucking dobies. What the fuck do you think I'm doing? And what was in the back of my mind was, I'm in the union. I don't have to take this. You see? And so, you know, I don't agree that unions are trash and that they're dead and all of that sort of thing.
They're empowering.
But what is trash is the union leadership. But the union leadership has increasingly separated itself from the members.
Yeah.
And so absolutely. We can't fall into the trap of seeing the union leadership as being the unions.
Yeah.
Do you still help people run for union office within that power structure? Like, what do you, from now that you're on the outside, you have this blog. I love it. I love the things that you're writing. You provoke a lot. And I'm reading through your PDF here a little bit on what happened to our unions. And I encourage people to follow those links. What do you direct your energies to, and what do you encourage either current union members, or let's say you're a current union member, you know, you're in a shop, you got, you know, one of these big unions representing you, they're dog shit. The business agent has lunch with the boss every afternoon. And you know, what do you do as a member in that shop? How do you change the conditions?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on the mood and the thinking of the workers that are around you. And my experience, I have to say, I have been a little bit cut off since, number one, I'm retired, and number two, I'm expelled from the union, which means I can't even go to union meetings anymore. So, and also, being an older person and with COVID, I have to be very careful about how much I'm around other people. But I do take some risks, you know. But in any case, I think that a lot depends on what is the mood and the consciousness of the workers that are around you. And up until recently, and I have worked with people in other unions, including the UFCW, grocery clerks and so on, helping them try to build opposition caucuses in their unions. And that's been very, very slow going up until recently. Most members, the union is the furthest thing from their thinking, you know? And tell the truth, a lot of younger people up until recently, you know, they've been caught up and all the hoopla about being an entrepreneur and all this sort of thing. I think now with all the ferment in society, I'm hoping that started to make its way into the membership, and that members would now start to think about, well, what can we do to make our union fight to change things in society as a whole? And up until recently, I don't think it's too likely right now anymore, but up until recently, it was starting to look like Trump was going to use an army of 50,000 people, including the Proud Boys and so on, to propel himself back into office. And what the union should have been doing was using their structures and their organization as a base to mobilize tens of millions of workers to stop that, you know? And if that meant getting Biden in, well, so be it. But that, if they had done that in and of themselves, that in itself would have set off a whole dynamic that neither Biden nor anybody else could have stopped. I should just mention, by the way, something else that we should really keep close track of. And she was in your former union, Brian, or she is, the president of the flight attendants, Sarah Nelson. I don't know if you remember,
you talked about her a little bit.
Shut down a couple years ago. She called for a national general strike.
Yeah.
And I have her speech on my blog site, and I just put up, she was talking yesterday and some other meeting. So these are the signs that something might be starting to change within the labor movement. And we have to look for that. One other thing I should just say is Trump might be gone in January, but the Trump think-alikes on the U.S. Supreme Court are going to remain, and there will be five of them. And I'm not a big, it's not like I have any illusions in Biden and the Democrats. Just the opposite. We can't count on them to fight those Trump think-alikes.
Not when it comes to labor. And I certainly...
Not when it comes to anything. Not when it comes to women's rights, racism, or anything else. And even if Trump is gone tomorrow, we still need a mobilization of the working class on the scale that only the unions can create in order to fight against this drift to the extreme right, including some outright fascist forces. And it has to start from the ground up, from the rank and file, in terms of building rank and file opposition caucuses that then can then come together. And in a wider movement, I do think that ultimately we need a mass working class party as the alternative to the Republicrats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been an advocate for, you know, that kind of systemic change. And we've heard statements from union leaders like that before. And kudos to those that make that statement. And in the last election cycle, the AFL-CIO approved a document to help support independent and third party candidates. They signed this amazing document. What a great document. They made pretty speeches. And then they went and funded the Democratic Party and didn't give a shit.
Of course. You know,
so honestly, when you're more cheery about our movement than I are. And I agree with you totally that it has to come from the grassroots, that members have to start taking charge of these unions or forming independent functions. But I really think that right now that labor has to really look at itself in this leadership and start allowing that to change, because I'm tired of hearing stories from you, from other union members, of fighting union leadership to get things done that union leadership shouldn't be need to fought to do. Union leadership should, if you're in union leadership, it shouldn't be so you can have a dinner with a fucking senator. It shouldn't be so. That's Gompers. That's what Gompers taught people. That somehow we needed a representative within the bourgeoisie. We don't need a representative in the bourgeoisie. We need a force in society. Christian, I talked a lot during this one.
No, I would just
have a couple extra minutes. If John can stay, we'll run a few minutes over. Don't worry.
I just got one question for John. John, what would you say is the biggest threat to the American labor movement currently? Is it the Republican Party, corporate power, sellout leadership? Is there one answer?
Oh, wow.
is there a Mount Rushmore of threats to organized labor?
I mean, there's a whole Mount Rushmore of threats, but let's put it this way. All the multiple threats that we are facing, let's think about what is the central focus of how to fight all of those threats. And that is, I think, building of opposition caucuses, rank and file caucuses that yes, partly in order to oppose their own leadership, but where they can get enough power to actually take action on their own, like what I was saying about our wildcat strikes, to actually build, to actually mobilize the members for the mass protests in the streets, and ultimately to actually link up and build a mass working class political party.
Yeah.
If you're looking on your screens now, you can see
democracy isn't easy.
No, if you're looking on the screens as I pull up the music to end our show today, which you're not supposed to see, you know, I just got my studio back up and, you know, you just have to deal with it, but there we go. So, as we get ready to close out, we take a look at this article from the Oakland Socialist. You can go to oaklandsocialist.com, to check out John's work. And I appreciate you being here tonight, comrade. Do you have any events coming up? What else does the Oakland Socialist do? I'm not sure if you're involved in anything that's coming up soon that you want to let people know about before we wrap it up.
I just urge people to check out my blog site. We usually have articles that we put up, you know, about 3-4 a week. We also do a podcast. If you look in podcasts for Oakland Socialist, we do a regular podcast also.
And thanks. Make sure to check out our show sponsor, the August Agency. The August Agency does QuickBooks accounting and more. You can reach them at www.theaugustagency.biz. I think, Christian, did I already have you do your plugs? Do you need to wrap up?
I could do another quick one really quick. I mean, all like right. I said, Christian Perez, you can find me on Twitter at Perez Podcast. If you want to email me, I'm on perezpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on YouTube, Modernity and Absurdity. I'll probably do a video tonight, wrap up some stuff. I want to talk about the Pope finally crossing the finish line on civil unions. The Pope caught up to 20 years ago. And that's pretty much it. You can find me on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook. I'm everywhere.
And everybody that's supported New Jersey Revolution Radio is awesome. And, you know, like I said at the top of the show, it's been a rough road. But you know what? You take your hits when you do this kind of work. You got to expect to get fired and expelled and beat up. And that's how history treats people to make change. But you know what? I've got so much support and so much love from the comrades around me and around the country. Hearing from you, John, you know, I appreciate your positive attitude and your advice for people. Go organize. I mean, just go organize. You want to vote? I don't care who you vote for. You want to vote for a Biden? You want to vote for the Potato Head? You want to vote for Gloria Rivera? You want to write in Eugene Debs? That's who I personally endorsed, although I'm not going to bother to fill it out because I'm busy that day. But look, voting, do it. Go ahead. Don't do it. Go ahead. I don't care. Organize. Until next week, 8 o'clock every Wednesday right here. You can get us on the web, www.njrevolutionradio.com, or you can check us on Facebook Live, YouTube, or our Twitter. I don't do live streams on Instagram yet because Instagram is like not friendly to live streams, but as soon as I can, I will, I promise. Until then, next week, this is Brian Powers, and I want to remind everybody that the police can quit their jobs. See you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because we lost our own kids.
And then have these politicians who want to co-opt everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They can't be, you don't arrest your way out of these problems.